Welcome to the Boring Habits Podcast. My name is Devon Jackson. I'm here with my best friend, Damon Clemens. And this is where we talk about the things that you do outside of the spotlight that can help you live an exciting life. Now, today we're going to talk about how your environment can impact your success. And hopefully we'll give you things that you can take away that will help you cultivate your environment to help success for you be more profitable in your life. But let's get into it. Ready to get into it?
Yeah. Okay. And I think today is going to be pretty cool because we're going to get into, like I said, how environment shape our success and everything with stories you were told as children and everything that impacted your identity, which impacts your habits and it leads into your success and everything. And then a couple of research things, you know, what it talks about either high performing, having that label as a high performing kid or like you're so smart, this on the other. And other research about how our social economics can actually impact our learning as well. And then wait till towards the end, you will find five things you can do to shape your environment to accomplish your goals today. So stay in tune for that and everything. But before I get into that though, I need to know what's up, man. How you feeling, dog?
I'm doing well. I'm excited. This is our second episode, so This is going to be like a fun topic to get into. This is stuff that like we've experienced, things that we've seen our family, friends experience, and I think a lot of people at home will have experienced something along these lines too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm excited. I'm ready to go. How about you?
Yeah, I'm okay. Like my tooth is like healing and everything. Like it looks nasty, honestly. Like where it got extracted. For people that don't know,
TMI.
I got my tooth extracted and everything, and so I've been kind of talking a little bit funny. Like it's kind of weird talking like this because I sound like I have a little lisp. But I'm feeling good overall though, and everything. So I'm ready to get into it. You ready?
Yeah, let's do it. Lead it off, man.
All right, cool. And so, when we're talking about environments, right, we're not necessarily talking about the climate, right? Even though that can have an impact on, you know, on your success and everything. But what we're talking about today is when we were growing up, like what conditions were we under that helped shape our identity? What perceptions led to our core beliefs into what we feel that we identify with, right?
Yeah.
And how that ended up influencing whether like we were succeeding or failing, right? And so we're like, I guess with the environment, what kind of different environments that you that helped shape that?
Yeah, I'm actually going to even touch on the heat thing. I think there's so many things as part of the environment. Like this is actually a area of study for science where they're trying to debate like how much, you know, of your traits are genetic versus how much is environment. Yeah. And there's so many things that impact it. Like, you know, in terms of even the weather, it could change whether you're a more happy person or someone who's more reserved.
Oh yeah.
When
yeah.
you talk True. About, you know, different cultures, you see different types of cultures tend to, you know, be prevalent in different types of climates. But those cultures also are something that will impact you. Your friendships, your teachers, the people who are willing to invest in you, the people who told you you couldn't make it. Like there's so many different things that I believe truly impact who we become.
Yeah, I would even add in work environment too, because I mean, the based on who you're working with and all that can completely change like your trajectory and everything. You can see that in professional athletes, where you see one athlete who's like a super promising young guy and everything, but then they're in a bad environment or they're in a bad organization, and they just like they look terrible.
Yeah.
But then they go somewhere else, like oh wow, like you know, how did they end up becoming so much better? Well, it's probably because they're in a different organization that helped them develop and nurture that talent, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to give an example, and for the people at home, you know, you haven't seen all the clips that we've done before, but Damon mentions Kanye in every single clip. So I'm actually gonna, you know, give you a little shout out here and talk about how like you even see like your parents and the people you surround yourself with have a big impact on who you are. And you see with Kanye, you know, and you see that there's just different versions of him that we've got to experience over time. There's one where when he was with his mother, then there was one when he was with the Kardashians, and then there's almost a different version of him now with his current wife. And so, like, this is something you see. People kind of mold themselves and change themselves and are willing to take different risks based on who they're with. And so, yeah, I think there's so many things that like impact your environment. So I'm actually excited to like dive into some of the specifics here.
Yeah, I think speaking of Kanye, I actually wonder what stories what he was told as a child and everything. Because when sometimes I think even doing the Sway interview, right? Like I am Walt Disney. I am Shakespeare in the flesh, right? Like all these great monikers and everything that he's giving himself, these labels he's giving himself to, like, you know, expectations of what other people should view him as, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, I think going off that, what stories were you told that you were good at? Like that, like, people were saying, like, oh, you're good at this. You're good at that. Oh, you're really great at this right here. And that helped. Became a fundamental core belief in you as a child?
So for me, I was told that I was good at quite a few things. Like I was told that I was, you know, smart. I was told that I was good at math, that I was good at persuasion and things like that. Mm-hmm. Like being, I shouldn't say persuasion, but at being a salesman. And so, yeah, whenever we'd have those little candy sales, whatever, I would kill it, bro. Oh my goodness. I could get somebody to buy some candy bars. But I was also told that I was, you know, really athletic and good at that stuff. And I think, you know, even some of these things, they continue into today. Some of the other ones, like, you know, being super athletic, I do think that, like, I have athleticism. But I think when you get older, some of these things start to get checked a little bit by society as well. And you have to, like, you know, adjust those stories that you tell yourself, or, you know. So those are some of the positive stories that I've seen. What about you?
Got you're smart, you're athletic. What other ones? You're good at basketball, good at football. Like some of the, like, also, yeah, like the things that, like, I, like, end up believing, like, okay, cool. Like these things that I'm really performing well at, like people were like pretty much validating that, like, okay, cool, you're good at this thing. Yeah. And so I end up like believing that long term. And I think on the contrary, what some of the things that, you know, you told yourself that you were bad at, or people told you that you were bad at?
When I was younger, I was told that I play too much. And I think those type of things stick with you. And so mm-hmm. it changed how I operate. It made me feel like, you know, being playful, being fun and joking and stuff like that was bad. And so, like, I had to shift or like think about that and you know, grow and reevaluate those things. But yeah, I think that would be one of those things, you know. I guess, yeah, I'll stop there. I think that's one for me. What about you?
I love music, but I think one of the things I was like, I'm pretty like bad at doing like musical instruments and all this. So at first I was doing the drums and all that. And I was okay with it.
Okay.
But I think after struggling a little bit, I was like, okay, I'm just a bad, you know, drummer or something like that, or like even guitar or something like that. Like today.
Oh, did you try the guitar?
I did. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I tried it in 2016. And I actually wrote about 7 songs and everything. I still have it in my notes and everything, like the chords and all that stuff
that's cool.
But like I just like didn't really get great at an instrument. Even though I wanted to, but I just didn't do anything.
You know, I'm gonna go the opposite for me there. I was actually told that I was, like, you know, pretty decent at instruments, and I never actually stuck with one to get like actually really good at it though. I've always just bounced around instruments from ukulele to guitar to baritone, like, and so forth. And so,
oh yeah, you used to play the ukulele like in college. So, like,
I was never that good. I was just, you know, decent enough to get people to rap over.
I thought you were bombed. I was like, dang, bro, who does it do putting out ukulele, dog, out of nowhere? But like, you say like, in general that like you played different instruments and all that, but it didn't really.
Yeah. Plan but out. It was another story that was like, you know, told to me. It was more so not that I was good at any particular instrument. It was that I was maybe good at learning instruments. And I think some of that was true. Like, mm-hmm. I could pick up, you know, the start of the instrument pretty quickly. It's just going beyond that, like, intermediate level.
Yeah.
I've never, you know, put that amount of time into any instrument. So,
yeah. Yeah. And I think also, like, I'm really fortunate to not have, like, a family that if I made mistakes and all that, like, they say that you're stupid, you're lazy, something. Mm-hmm. Or, like, I did hear a lot, you're lazy and everything like that. Like, not towards me, but to other people in my family and all that, like, it really affected them in a certain way. And so these are like some of the things that, like, I think we've experienced and all that. And so I think the viewer or the listeners at home, like, I want you to reflect on this and see like what things that you were told, the core beliefs that you were told that you were good at and that you were bad at. And if you want to, you'd like to share, definitely comment where and whatever platform you're viewing this on or listening on, because we would like to know and everything and help that with that.
I'm glad you opened that up to them. But like, yeah, you know, I want to touch on this a bit more because I don't think, you know, especially in the Black households, we understand how much this impacts our children, our younger siblings, our younger cousins and all of that stuff. But yeah, I've seen so many people tell people that they're lazy or that they're this and tell them these negative stories. And it bleeds into who they believe they are in themselves. And it has definitely impacted themselves. So I think we have to be so careful with the words that we use for other people and how we describe other people, especially when they're young, because they haven't actually fixated within themselves how to describe themselves. So they're only using your paradigm for them. They're only using the mirror that you have created for them. So
like it's how you even say
dangerous,
like,
bro.
Yeah, because even some of the things that going into after college, right? Like a lot of people even during college say like, oh, you're so smart and everything. When I get to working, like I immediately almost had imposter syndrome. Mm. And that's one of the things that like even positive praise, like negative praise, like, I mean, negative, you know, identities definitely, you know, are terrible and all that. But positive can also like lead to those things like imposter syndrome where like you don't know if you're really that good. And it can lead to like some really mental scars and all that.
So this is actually like a thing that we see not just like your first job, but you see in a lot of big tech companies, you know, as well, where people talk about like, oh, they joined, you know, Meta or Google or Microsoft or whatever, these big tech companies, and they've been considered smart their entire lives. They've been crushing it their entire lives. And then now they're around all of these other smart people and they have this imposter syndrome of like, I don't belong here. And it takes a while for someone to actually kind of reconcile with them themselves. And some people never do. Some people will go their entire time at that job and will leave it because they're like, you know what, this just isn't a fit for me because I don't feel smart here. And it's not that they weren't smart, it's just that they banked their identity on this. And so it's an interesting thing. But like, continue, where were you going?
I think it's really key to like, you know, making sure that you have the language you need or have the environment you need in order to cultivate that success for you.
I have one more story, really quick anecdote before we move on, but it's building on how important this environment is to be able to make mistakes. And so I have a cousin, one of the smartest people I've ever met, right? He had this just natural knack for being able to work with technology. So he would, you know, have these game systems and he would open them up and break them down and like, you know, piece by piece put it back together and stuff like that. And it used to drive my uncle crazy, and it makes sense. It's like, you know, you ain't got money just to blow, and so you're like, oh, if you do this and you break it, I've just spent money on this thing,
right,
and you just broke it, bro.
Yeah.
Like, that'd be so frustrating.
And so I
think there, like, he didn't create this environment that like let, you know, my cousin know that this was okay, that, you know, you made a mistake and this is okay to experiment and learn. And I think that like changed how my cousin thought of, you know, himself, thought of this work. But like, I think if he would have created this environment that was, you know, really saying like, okay, mistakes are okay, but what do we do? How do we respond to it? How do we, what, like, maybe even talking about like, okay, hey, this is, we can experiment with this one, but this other game system, let's not touch. I don't know what the exact answer is. And I'm sure my uncle probably did a few of these things, but like, it's a tough thing to do, to create an environment where mistakes are okay, but we have to figure out how to do it.
And so now we're going to finally get into what the research suggests actually about intelligent praise. There's a research paper published in 1998, and it's titled The Praise for Intelligence Can Undermine Children's Motivation and Performance, right? And so what they end up doing, they had three different groups. They had a control group that didn't get any praise before or after answering these questions. They had another group where the kids were just fed intelligent praise, like, oh, you're so smart, you're so this, you're so talented. And then they had another group, right? And they were fed more so the, oh, you're really hardworking. Like, when you made that, when you answered that question correctly, like, I really love how diligent you were. Even when the problem was tough, I love how just how much you worked hard. I know it was tough, but I appreciate your hard work and everything, right?
Building that resilience.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. Those, like, the motivational, I guess, praise and everything. So for the intelligence praise group, right, they actually perform worse over time. So when they got it, the second, they perform one set of questions, and then after that, get the praise, for a second one, they perform worse on the second set of questions. And they also tend to believe that intelligence was fixed. They believe that intelligence was fixed and not something that you can actually improve upon over time. And they also tend to attribute performance to identity. So let's say the first set of problems, they, oh, you're so smart and everything, they perform worse. They end up pretty much similar to imposter syndrome, where they're like, oh, actually, I'm not that good. Like, you know, it completely dismantled what they thought of themselves, right?
I just, like, poking in here, I love what you're talking about, where you said, oh, they thought intelligence was fixed, because this is something that we see in various communities so much, yeah, where we're like, oh, yeah, that person's smart, and, like, they were just born smart, and, like, I was born dumb, and, like,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, man, it frustrates me when I hear people say, like, I'm just bad at math, and it's like, no, you just had the wrong teachers. You had the wrong system. Like, you know, no one's just inherently bad at math. And so, like, building on this research, there was a paper published by Plowman and Deary in Molecular Psychiatry, where they talk about how intelligence is partially genetic, but part of it also isn't. So there's, I think, a correlation of 0.6, which is a sizable correlation between, like, genetics and your intelligence. Oh, but that means, you know, they're looking on a scale to 1. So that means there's still 0.4 that is built completely outside of your genetics, which means that's your environment, that's your hard work. And so, like, intelligence isn't fixed. There's quite a bit that, like, you can do with the effort and the energy you put into something. Wow. So, like, I think this is part of the problem with, you know, the way they were thinking of intelligence in the study you were talking about, is that they thought it was a fixed thing instead of something that is able to be pushed or molded by your environment.
Yeah, exactly. And that leads to also, because of their identity being tied to performance, it actually shows less challenges. The way you learn is actually challenging yourself to actually, like, push yourself. Like, okay, I don't know, but, you know, you have these problems intentionally so you can get better, essentially. But it shows less challenges because to maintain that label of, oh, you're so smart, you're so talented and everything, right? And that actually ended up leading them to lie about their scores. So when they were told, oh, well, how'd you do? Like, you know, oh, I aced that, dog. When they got a 60% probably. Like, you know, it was like, and I've had that too, where, like, you know, you don't want to be embarrassed because you have this, like, expectations to meet people's meet people's expectations, pretty much.
You know, we talk about this book, and we're probably going to talk about this book a lot on this channel, which is The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Mm-hmm. But it talks about how, you know, if your identity shouldn't be tied to some of these ethereal things, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so tying it to just your intelligence, or to saying, like, oh, hey, I am considered a smart person. Well, things like that will be challenged at some point, because you are not the smartest person on the planet, most likely. And so you're going to run into challenges where you're not the smartest in the room, and you have to figure out that that's okay. And so instead of tying it to things of that nature, that book talks about tying it to something called your character ethic, which is more of your fundamental principles of, like, who you are. It's not, oh, I'm smart, but it's more of, like, I'm honest. It's not so much of, like, oh, I... Even that, like, I am fast or athletic, but it's more of, like, I am hardworking. Like, you know, I'm diligent. Like, things like that.
Yeah, and that actually leads to what they found with the effort group. The effort children that were praised on how much work they had to put in to actually solve the problems. And they actually performed better over time. So when they got the first set of problems, second set of problems, they actually performed a lot better than all the groups. They believe intelligence was malleable. So instead of it being fixed, they were like, oh, I can actually work at it and everything. So when, in your example exactly, like, if you're not the smartest in the room, Well, you have this belief that I can work at it. If I work somebody, I can be that. I can be there right there. And so that's actually an extremely powerful tool to have or mindset to have, right?
I just want to balance that because, yeah. like, yeah, you know, there's so much you can do with hard work and diligence.
Yeah.
I know in this day and age, we see a lot of this, like, hustle culture. You got to work 24-7, 24-7. Yeah. You got to do all of these things. And
yeah.
I do think that there's a balance. And, like, you know, being hardworking doesn't mean you don't take breaks. It doesn't mean that you don't care for yourself. It doesn't mean that you don't actually rest properly.
Yeah.
It just means that when you are, you know, working on something, that you are giving it your you know, best effort, or you're giving it proper effort. You know, so
also in the effort praise group, they also tend to attribute performance to learn opportunity. So this is like, instead of if I make a mistake, like, oh, okay, these are ways I can actually improve upon and actually get better. And then the last thing is that they embrace challenging tasks more. So when they were given a set of problems, instead of taking the easier one, they're like, oh, because I'm praised on my hard work, I need to go for the more challenging ones, and actually help improve their performance over time. The last group, the control group, one with no praise, they actually performed the same. It was no difference in their performance, the first set versus the second set.
Did you get any of this effort praise as you were growing up?
Yeah, in some instances, yeah. Yeah, I would say so. Like,
give me an example if you have one.
I think the first time in for school, I actually tried hard. I actually got like A's and B's in fifth grade. I was like, oh, wow, that actually felt rewarding. But that was a self thing. That was nobody else, because before I was kind of like, just, ah, then doing the minimum. I'll get A's in math, everything else. I don't care if I got a B or a C. It is what it is. As long as I don't get below that, I don't get a whooping, I'm good. Right? And so once I popped myself, I was like, oh, wow, like, I got A's and B's. I'm pretty proud. And I actually was like, okay, how far can I go? And so I would say for effort praise, I would say that's the first thing that comes to mind.
I asked that question because, yeah, for me, I think I had, you know, a lot of family, you know, even friends who would look at the stuff I would do and just be like, oh, you're just so smart, you know, and like, then that's the intelligence praise. But I, you know, as I thought about this a bit more, I do think that I had a bit of that effort praise. And, you know, some of it came from my mother. You know, she very much so bought into all of my crazy big dreams. And so, like, when I would be like, oh, we could build a tree house in the backyard without any tree, she'd be like, yeah, sure, why not? You can go and do those things. And so, like, she would encourage me to go and work hard and build something up from the ground up. And so, like, that was exciting. I think my dad did the same thing. You know, he also just emphasized that hard work was, like, really important. And, like, it didn't matter the result all the time. Like, it's okay to fail. You know, it's okay to not be, you know, super successful in the first round of things, and just worry about make sure that you did the best that you could do. And then I think the one other thing was I would do projects that were way beyond the necessity. So, like, we had to build like a building from a government building in one of my grades. And so most people just did the Washington Monument because you just put a little pole there and you're like, oh, I'm done. I was like, I'm gonna do the Capitol building. And like, I wanted to do everything in detail. And so, like, when I would show that stuff to teachers, they'd be like, oh. And I think I love that reaction. And so I think those are things that, like, you can even think about for, you know, the people in your life. You know, when you see them do something that is putting in a lot of hard work, taking risk, and that might mean that they fell, and, like, praise that, love that, you know, and do it for yourself as well. You know, like, when you do something that is awesome, like, wow, I'm really impressed that you worked that hard. Cause that kind of goes to what you were saying about when you start applying yourself, you start saying, like, oh, wow, I like what I did there. I think the research that I found was by Annette LaRoe. And this is more on the straight up environment that you create by how you interact with figures of authority. She talks about two types of growth cultivation. So you have concerted cultivation and you have natural growth. And so concerted cultivation is where you are given an example. You plant something, let's say in a greenhouse, and you're looking at it every day. You're pruning it, you're watering it, giving it the exact amount of things that it needs so it can grow as best as it can. And we see a lot of that in the middle class. The middle class does that a lot for their kids. And then you have this thing called natural growth. is basically you say, okay, I found this nice little area in my garden. I'm going to dig a nice hole, plant this thing, and I'm letting nature do its thing.
Okay.
And this is something you see a lot more in working class and, you know, poor people will do this as well. And so this is stuff that, like, I've seen, like, firsthand, you know, between, you know, friends and family and myself to some degree. Like, you see this difference. And the reason behind it is that natural growth path is because you'll see a lot of the poorer households or working class households say, you know what, I trust the expert. I trust that the teacher knows what they're doing. I trust that the doctor knows what they're doing. And so we just leave it to them. We're like, the education part of my kid's life belongs in your hands. While, like, the middle class will say, like, education is existing everywhere in a sense, and that it's their job to make sure that the teachers are accountable and that the teachers do this. And so they're willing to challenge teachers, like, oh, you know, I don't think that you're doing this right, or maybe you could, you know, give a little bit more attention here. And, like, they're just so much more involved.
I mean, in preschool, when I was over in Eastside, where, like, there was no question to the teacher, because if you did, then, like, they may tell on your mama, and that taught, like, not to challenge authority. Like, you know, even if you were in the right to question the thing, like, it was just, like, no, you don't do that. But that's something that I'm actually learning to, like, do more as I get more comfortable about expressing, like, what I actually feel. I think that ended up subverting, or more so helping to drown a lot of the emotions or different things that I want to get out, or at least question and everything.
I think I've had a mix of both to some degree, but I've always felt, and I like, looking back, I appreciate this from my parents so much, that it feels like they've always empowered me to, like, speak my mind, you know, to some sense. Maybe not as much to them. You know, I was never, like, you know, able to just talk anything like that, you know. So,
yeah.
But, like, when it came to like, approaching adults, I was allowed to have conversations. And I was expected to have conversations with adults, right? I was expected to be very respectful in those conversations, but to also be very honest in those conversations.
Wow.
I think it's a very tricky balance to find there. But I noticed that, like, for me, it means that in different situations I'm in now, I'm more willing to talk up. And so you gave the example of your manager. I've told my manager plenty of times of things that I'm like, oh, yeah, no, like, you could do this better. And it's a risky thing to some degree. Like, you know, it makes you nervous a little bit. And it's not like I don't have those feelings. I still have those feelings, like, oh, man, did I go a little too far? Yeah. But, like, I know I have to get it out. And it's contributed to my success for sure by being a, like, feeling empowered to do that. So, like, I encourage people at home, you know, to encourage that and your younger siblings and your kids and your younger cousins, you know, to be willing to speak up to authority and challenge them on things, but also to do it for yourself.
Yeah.
To change your life.
Cool. And so we still have the five things you can do to reshape your environment to help make sure you succeed in your goals and everything, reshape that. But before we do that, I have a couple of examples, actually, that I want to get out about things that recently and everything that I've done, or even some in the past and everything, like, for effort-based things that encourage me is the Duolingo app. You can get actual rewards as you get that those days increased.
And that reward is important because, you know, our brains as humans is very much wired on dopamine and oxytocin.
Yeah.
And so, like, hitting those reward centers when we do something, you know, positive or good helps us, you know, continue to go down that route.
In second grade, I had a teacher that Miss Vaughn, like, she would do this every morning and everything, where, like, because we're in such a, like, a lower class and everything, there's a lot of, like, things that a lot of resources that we're not get, so they create a lot of problems. So in order to help kids to get some kind of motivation and, like, have identity with, we had this mantra that was like, I am loved, I am positive, I am the future, and I'm going to tell it like it is. I won't let anything stand in my way. My eyes is on the prize, it's going to stay that way. And so since that time, like, I think it ingrained in me without me really even knowing to, like, much later on, like, dang, that was pretty powerful. And even to this day, me remembering that is, like, something that's a testament to this her being this such a great influence on my life and everything.
Yeah, we talked about this before, like earlier in this episode, but the words that, you know, you use for the people around you impact them. Yeah. The words you use for yourself impact yourself. So, yeah, I mean, no wonder that mantra impacted your life, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And then even Kobe, like with this...
Mamba mentality?
Mamba mentality. Well, more so, not necessarily Mamba mentality, but what he perceived failure as. Like when he missed a shot, he was like, okay, that's just... everybody else was like, oh, I missed a shot. Like, you know, you in your head, like, yeah. Dang, I'm missing shots and everything. But he's like, he was so confident that the next shot he's going to make that actually didn't even worry him. Like he was so much in the moment that he pretty much redirected failure as like, okay, this is a story that I'm told and it's just a way for me to get better. And that drove him in order to be one of the best places to ever grace the earth.
I know we're going to have more, you know, content that talks about like this particular thing, but like this angle of failure being so important to cultivating who you become. Mm-hmm. Can't be understated.
Yeah.
Right. Like I've seen family members start businesses that fell and then they start another one. And like that one may work out. And like this is the thing actually in the startup world, right? Like you see so many of these like, you know, billionaires and multimillionaires. And the thing is generally their first startup doesn't work.
Right.
Or like, even if it did, like it went through multiple, you know, iterations where like multiple things that they tried fell. And you'll see that a lot of businesses, the first thing they started with is not the thing that they're doing today.
Yeah.
And like, you know, failure is a thing and you almost have to embrace it.
Yeah. And that's a scary thing too. Cause if you're like in an environment where you like basing your label or your identity on performance, it can be an extreme struggle to go through that. I think that's probably actually a reason why like it took me a while to get comfortable actually getting the business and everything, like actually start on something, because I'm like, what if I fail? Well, like, okay, cool, like you just, it's like reframing that into like it's just a learning experience is like something that took a lot from me and all that, and I'm grateful to like go through that and still learning that in many different ways and all that. But we're gonna get into the five things we can do right now and everything to reshape those environment conditions. So number one is journaling or writing. Two, redirect your language to redirect your identity. Three, reward your effort. Four, embrace mistakes as opportunity to learn. And five, the last one, think process over results. And so now we're going to get more into what these things kind of mean, right?
I'm excited about the first one.
Yeah,
so I think it's my favorite.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I think journaling or writing and everything helps like I know it helped me a lot to be self-aware, like where my thoughts are. Sometimes, like during the day, like you have these thoughts in your mind and everything, but you're not really, it's not really right in front of you. It's just like in your head and everything. So getting out and writing it and me reflecting like, oh wow, this is how I view myself or how I view the world. It helps me to be aware, like, okay, this is what I need to work on. Like these things I can reflect on and like, okay, how can I get better at, right?
It's hard to be a better version of yourself if you don't know yourself.
Right.
So you have to know like who you are, why you are who you are, and like to be able to break it down and understand that this is the journey that brought you to where you are today.
Yeah.
Because unless you know where you are today, it's hard to chart a path to where you actually want to go. So yeah, like self-awareness is so important for almost every aspect of your life.
Yeah.
In terms of career, in terms of relationships,
yeah.
In terms of making money, in terms of just being a better you. Like,
yeah.
It's so important. And I actually want to talk a little bit more about why I also think this is important is because there's a book called Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell, right? And in here, he talks about how you have just a variety of environmental factors that impact your success. And so things that are sometimes out of your control, like birth timing. And so when I say that, it means that, you know, being born in a certain month could mean that you're ahead of your classmates because you're more developed by the time you get into the school year, because the school year is what, September to May or June or whatever. And you'll see it vice versa. Like maybe you were born in a time where it makes you feel behind. And so you'll go your entire like school career feeling behind, feeling maybe dumb. And those effects compound on one another. And so like you need to be self-aware about like how so many different things in your life impacted you so that you can say, oh, that wasn't me actually being dumb. I was just less developed, and then I was told this story over and over
again.
Right. And so, like, who am I? And, like, you have to be willing to dig deep and figure out who you actually are, and that takes work.
Yeah, I mean, even – and writing doesn't even have to be a journal thing. It can be some kind of creative expression, right, where you're doing, like – I mean, even videos, or if you do writing, let's say you write poems or songs like that, like, those are other ways to get your feelings out and recognize them and say, okay, this is where I'm at and everything, so just – to just be able to reflect on it in a efficient way, yeah. Right?
And I also want to touch one more thing in terms of, like, being self-aware, because we talked about this at the beginning of the episode, but, like, culture impacts you as well. So you almost have to be aware of your culture and, like, what that is going to mean for you, right? Like, let's say you're living in a culture, or you're living in a household where everybody eats unhealthy. All your friends eat unhealthy, your family eats unhealthy, and, well, you'll never think about eating healthy in that environment. Well, let's say somebody outside of your environment tells you, oh, you should eat healthy. Well, if you have all these people, once again, eating unhealthy, but you don't know how to start eating healthy, once again, you won't eat healthy. And, like, then if you even learn how to eat healthy, but, like, you don't know how to make it taste good, then you still won't eat healthy. Like, you see what I'm saying? Like, there's so much that can be building against you. And until you can actually take a step back and say, oh, I see that there is this birth timing that has impacted me. I see that there is this culture that tells me that this is okay, or this is what I should do. Also, your family, we hear about generational curses, and, you know, I think our generation talks a lot about breaking those curses. Hard to break a generational curse that you haven't identified, and how haven't identified how it has impacted you. But, like, you have to be able to take a step back and look at all these things and then say, okay, this is why I am who I am. Now, who do I want to be?
Right. And that leads to redirecting number two, redirecting your language to redirect your identity. And once you're aware of these thoughts and these thought patterns, essentially, you can start to, instead of saying, oh, I'm like, these negative labels, like I'm slow, I'm dumb, I'm this, I'm that, whatever. You can say, you know what, maybe instead of I'm bad at this, maybe I didn't put a lot of effort into developing that, more so redirecting it to more discipline, to or more effort language, right?
It's so important for you to redirect your language and your identity to decide who you want to be if you want to be successful in this world. It goes back to what you said earlier about the stories. If you continue to tell yourself the stories that everyone else has fed to you, then you'll always be what they have told you that you are.
Once we're redirecting that language and all that, we need to make sure that we reward our effort. So let's say we took that chance and did that mile, something like that, whatever. Like, you know, rewarding the effort is somehow, some way to, like, may it, like, really feel, get that dopamine hit, whatever, or, like, something to feel satisfied about, right? So that will encourage you to continue that effort and to get better at that skill or habit, right?
You need to associate, like, something positive with this positive thing that you've done.
Mm-hmm. And so the fourth one, embrace mistakes as opportunities to learn. I think this is pretty, like, important.
It's super important. Yeah. We talked about this before, that, like, it's not even so much of embracing struggle, but, like, this concept of failure isn't a bad thing. And you have to internalize that over and over again, that as long as you can learn something from it, keep on pushing.
Yeah.
Now, I want to be clear, though, like, failure for the sake of failure is not good, okay?
Right.
We're not advocating for you to just be like,
right,
yeah, I failed, and then go do the same thing over again.
Yeah.
You know, there's a movie with Scrooge, and, you know, he's visiting the grocer, Christmas past, future, and present, whatever, and I forget which one, but, like, she basically is like, bro, you've lived your entire life doing the same wrong thing over and over again, and you haven't learned a dang thing. And I was right. Like, man, just dying of laughter at that point, because, like, yeah, like, that's definitely not where you want to go. If you are going to fail, you need to be introspective about it. This goes back to the self-awareness point.
Yeah.
You need to be able to sit down and say, like, why did I fail? What did I learn from it? How will I do it differently? And if you can't do that, then the failure was purposeless.
Yeah. And the fifth way, it ties everything up to the fifth one, which is think process over results. Instead of saying, like, oh, I performed this for here, I perform bad or good and everything, it's like, okay, how did I get to that, and where can I learn from this, both good and bad results.
Yeah.
And so once we have that kind of framework and all that, it will help reshape the conditions that we were brought under, like some of the core beliefs that might have been harmful to our performance and everything. This will help direct us to a more sustainable and more successful future.
Yeah, I mean, we hear the quote all the time. It's about the journey, not the destination. And like, that's so important. And if you even look at, you know, this podcast and like what we're trying to create here, it's very much focused on the process. That's like literally why we call it Boring Habits.
Yeah, yeah.
And we talk about it all the time that it's the boring habits, that process that you do, which we actually don't think the habits are boring, for the record. But, but like, it's that process that you build that helps you lead that exciting life. And so like, yeah, it helps you get to that destination. And the thing is, you can always adjust the process to get to a different destination. The problem is if you focus on the destination, once you get to that destination, like, and you realize, oh, I actually want it to be somewhere else, it's hard to shift, you know, from that destination. So you like, I can't emphasize enough. I really love this number five. Focus on the process.
Yeah.
Focus on the habits.
Yeah.
I think something that I want to make sure people like take away, you know, the viewers at home, I should say, is that to deny or diminish the impact of environment on success is foolish. But right. To believe that you can't alter your environment so that you can have this success is even more foolish. And yeah, what I mean by that is it goes in both ways. When you see somebody being super successful, to believe that it's just them, their sheer willpower, is insane to believe that. So when you see billionaires, know that there's so many things that had to go right for them in their lives for them to get there. But also when you see someone who's down on their luck, you also need to understand that there's so many things that had to go wrong in their life for them to be where they are as well. And so your environment plays a big role in who you are. And so we want to, as a society, continue to make the environment better for everyone. But you as an individual have an opportunity to make your own environment better, as long as you can step back, be aware, and start taking some small steps here and there. And so do not feel like your future, your destiny, or anything along those lines are out of your control.
It actually ties into the motivational quote I have for the day and everything.
Oh, let's hear it.
You are a product of your environment, so choose an environment that will best develop you toward your objective. Analyze your life in terms of its environment. Are the things around you helping you toward success, or are they holding you back?
That's crazy. We didn't even try to tie that together. It just came naturally. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's amazing, that was pretty good, man.
Yeah. Thank you. Like I said, thank you for this long and everything, your attention for this long and everything. Make sure you comment, like, share, subscribe on all the platformies, man. And like I said, in a comment, like what you got out of this episode, the stories you told and everything. Like we like to really interact with the people and everything.
Love to hear it.
Yeah. And so with that being said, my dog, we are out.
I don't know why you always say it like that.
I don't know.